नमोम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद अद्वैत गदाधर शिवा सादि गौर भक्त वृंदा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर ज्वाइनिंग टुडे सेशन। वी हैव बीन डिस्कसिंग फ्रॉम द सेवेंथ चैप्टर ऑफ भगवद गीता which is titled as Vijnana Yoga or Knowledge of the Absolute. So we saw that Krishna, after describing about Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga, he ended the sixth chapter by establishing Bhakti as the topmost process. Yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam samaya yukta tamomataha. So he establishes that of all types of yogas, bhakti is the topmost. Shraddhavan bhajate yomam. One who faithfully serves me is the best. He establishes this in towards the end of sixth chapter. Then in seventh chapter, so that verse actually lays the foundation for starting this section of the next six chapters, which primarily talks about devotional service. So then in the next verse, in the seventh chapter, first verse, he describes little more the process of bhakti. He says, Maya asakta mana partha yogam yunjan madashrayah asamshayam samagram mam yatajnyasasi tachrunu. He says, who is this? What is this process in which a person, you know, shraddhavan bhajate? What is this process in which one faithfully worships Krishna? What is this process? So he says, mai asakta manaha, with your mind attached to me, and yogam yunjan, and such a person wants to establish a relationship with Krishna, and madashrayaha, so he is surrendered only to Krishna. He is not surrendered to, he does not have any partial dependence on any demigods, and he does not have any dependence on the process of karma, jnana, yoga, etc. Okay. So, shraddhavan bhajate yomam, asamshayam samagram mam yata jnasasi tachrano. So, he says that without a doubt, by this process, one can understand Krishna completely in his aspect of Bhagavan. In the complete aspect of Bhagavan, one can understand Krishna if one practices this path. Okay. So then, Krishna in the next verse, he says, Jnanam teham sa vijnanam idam vakshyam yasheshatah yad gyatvaneha bhuyon yad jnatavyam avashishyate. So he says that I will asheshatah te aham vakshyami. I will completely explain to you, O Arjuna, jnanam sa vijnanam, knowledge of my powers, which is called as jnana, and sa vijnanam, along with the knowledge of my sweetness. Yad jyatva, knowing which, anyad jyatavyam na iha bhuyo avashishyate. There is nothing else that remains to be understood. So that's what he says. Jnanam teham sa vijnanam idam vakshyami asheshatah. And then he says, manushyanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam verti tatvatah. He says that amongst thousands of men, some of them attain success in their endeavors. Kaschit yatati siddhaye. Amongst those who attain success, hardly anyone knows me in truth. Because hardly anyone practices the process of bhakti by which one can know Krishna in truth. So, manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvatah. Then, Krishna says, okay, first let me talk about knowledge of my powers. Bhumirav analo vayu kammano buddhi revacha ahankara iti yamme binna prakriti rashtada. First he talks about his material energy. He says that earth, water, fire, air, ether, then pradhan, mahatattva and false ego, these are Krishna says, these are my separated energy in eight divisions. Bhinna prakriti, my bahiranga shakti, like that. And then he says, apareya itastu anyam prakatim vidhime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. Iyam apara, what I have discussed in the previous verse is actually my inferior energy. But me param prakritim viddi. But you should understand that I have a superior energy, an energy which is superior to this energy. Itastu anyam, which is quite different from this energy that I have described in the previous verse. Jiva bhuta mahabaho. It is the jivas who are superior to this material energy. And why they are superior? Yaya idam daryate jagat. Because they employ this inferior energy for their own enjoyment. So therefore, this jiva, the tatastha shakti, which is a jiva, is superior to the material energy. Like that he says. Etad yonini bhutani sarvani tyupadaraya aham krishnasya jagatah prabhava pralayastata. Whatever you see in this material world, O Arjuna, you should understand that it has its origin in these two energies. It has its origin in these two energies, which is material energy and the jiva tattva. It is a combination of both or one of these. But aham krishnasya jagatah prabhava pralayastata. But understand that I am, in essence, the ultimate origin and dissolution of this whole universe. So Krishna is the origin, even though in the very previous phrase of the same verse, he says, the origin is in these two energies. But immediately he says, I am the origin, meaning these are my energies only. So in that sense, Krishna is the origin. Aham krishnasya jagatah prabhava pralayastata. And pralayaha also. And at the end of dissolution, all of this come and, it enters into me as Karanodaka Sai Vishnu. So it enters into Krishna. Then he says, Matta parataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya, mayi sarvamidam protam sutre maniganaiva. Not only that, I am not just the source, I am not just the origin and dissolution, but I am the source of maintenance also. Matta parataram na anyat kinchidasti. There is nothing which exists which is superior to me. Mayi sarvam idam protam. Everything is pervaded by me in my feature as Paramatma or Shirodaka Sai Vishnu. Sutre manigana iva, just as pearls are strung on a thread. The pearls are visible. Okay. But the thread is never visible. Similarly, the Paramatma is never visible. His nature is never visible. It is the nature of the living entity that is visible. Or any matter that is visible. Okay. Then he says, then he talks about how, then he expands on this theme as how Krishna is the essence of everything or he is the source of everything. Krishna says, Rasoham apsu kaunteya prabhasmi sasi shurya yoho pranavah sarva vedeshu shabdakye paurusham vishu. So he says, I am the taste of water. Taste is the source of water. So in that way, Krishna is the taste, which he is the source. Prabhasmi Shashishurya Yoho. I am the light of the sun and moon. Okay. light is the essence of the sun and moon, so he is the essence of sun and moon. Pranavah sarva vedeshu, I am the om or the pranava in the Vedas. Shabdakke, I am the sound of ether. Ether is produced due to sound, from sound. And Paurusham Rishu, I am the successful efforts of men. So the successful effort is the essence of, it is the essence of men. So he is that. Then he says, Punyo Gandha Prativyamscha Tejaschasmi Vibhavasau. Jivanam Sarva Bhuteshu Tapaschasmi Tapasvishu. I am the fragrance of the earth element. I am the heat in fire. I am the life in all entities. I am the austerity in the tapasvi. These are all either the source or the essence, which is all Krishna. Which means these are all his vibhutis. That's what it means. Bijam mam sarva bhutanam viddhi partha sanatanam buddhir buddhibhatam asmi tejas tejas vinamaham. I am the eternal original cause of all living entities. Sarva bhutanam sanatanam bijam. I am the original, eternal, original cause of all living entities. Buddhir buddhimatam asmi. I am the intelligence of the intelligent. Then, tejas tejas vinamaham. I am the majesty of the majestic. Which means he is the essence of everything. Balam balavatam chaham kamaraga vivarjitam. Dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarishabha. I am the strength of the strong, which is devoid of lust and anger. And I am that lust, which is according to dharma, which is only for begetting children. Echaiva sattvika bhava rajasas tamasas che matte eveti tam viddi natvaham teshu te mayi. So, in order to summarize the point that he is trying to convey, Krishna says, Echaiva sattvika bhava rajasas tamasas che. Whatever you see in this world, which are either in sattva guna, rajoguna, or tamoguna, matta eva, it all comes from me. Natu aham teshu te mayi. I am not in them, but they are in me. Which means, I am not dependent on them, but they are dependent on me. That's what it means. So, all things are dependent on Krishna, but Krishna is not dependent on anything else. So, like that. So then, everything that you see is controlled by the modes, but Krishna is the controller of the modes. Therefore, one should surrender to Krishna. So in the next verse, he says, Tribir gunamaye avair evi sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabi janati mamebhya paramavyayam. Even though I am the source of everything, but because people are covered by the modes, they cannot see my hands. They cannot see me clearly. They cannot see my hands. Tribir gunamayir bhavair ebis sarvam idam jagat. The whole world is bewildered by these three gunas. Okay. So therefore, people do not know me. Mam na abhijanati. One does not know me. And who is Krishna? He is avyayam. He is unchanging. Ebhyah param. And he is beyond everything. He is beyond all these three modes and the products of the modes. He is beyond all these things. But because people are covered by the modes, they are bewildered by the modes, they cannot understand Krishna. So in this context, last week we had this elaborate discussion about how, what is the effect of the modes? How the three modes affect, you know, and what do they affect? And what is the, when the three modes affect whatever they are affecting, what is the effect, what is the result? Okay. So understanding the three modes and their influence of on bhakti and worship. So we saw last time that how the three modes, of course, this is very, it looks quite nasty for even for me, I am not able to understand what is written here. But if you have attended the previous session, then you will be able to understand this. But if you did not attend the last session, you may find this too much jumbled But nevertheless, I will try to explain. We saw last time that the three modes can affect either the faith or they can affect the swabhava, one's conditioned nature. Okay. And faith is of two types. One is called as Shastric faith or faith based on the scriptures, and the other faith is called as sentimental faith or Swabhavajam Shraddha, non-Shastric faith, which is just purely experiential faith. Okay. So now the three modes can affect either of one's, if one has Shastric faith, the three modes can affect one's Shastric faith, or the three modes can affect one's experiential faith, and the three modes can affect one's Swabhava. Okay. So then we try to understand how the effect of the three modes manifest practically. So when the three modes affect the pure Shastric faith, first, what is pure Shastric faith? Pure Shastric faith means Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam Bhaktiruttama. We understood that pure Shastric faith means faith which is in which there is purity of goal and purity of means to attain that goal. Purity of goal means there is no other desire other than the desire to please Krishna. And purity of means means the means to attain that is only through Navada Bhakti or the ninefold devotional service. Okay. So this is actually scriptural faith which is unaffected by the three modes. But sometimes this pure faith can be mixed with the three modes. So when the pure Shastric faith is mixed with the mode of goodness, then one's aspiration becomes liberation. One aspires for liberation. And in one's practice also, one may mix that practice with either karma, jnana, yoga, etc. Okay. And if that pure devotional faith or pure Shastric faith is mixed with the mode of passion, then one may aspire for some material benefits, name, fame, glorification, etc. And if it is mixed with the mode of ignorance, then through practice of devotional service, one may aspire for pulling down others, causing violence to others, expressing their envy towards others, which means, they actively pray for pulling someone else down. Okay. So that is when one's pure Shastric faith is mixed with the mode of ignorance. So therefore, when the three modes affect the pure devotional faith, then it leads to either Sattvaguni Bhakti or Rajoguni Bhakti or Tamoguni Bhakti. But nevertheless, all because it is Shastric faith, all these four types of Shastric faith, the pure one, the Sattvaguni, the Rajoguni and the Tamoguni, all four of them worship Krishna only. They worship Krishna only. And what happens when the three modes affect the sentimental faith or one's experiential faith, which is not based on Shastras? So if it is not based on Shastras, then it inspires a person to worship worship not Krishna. Okay. For example, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that what is that? What is that verse? Yaksharaksham Shirajasan Pretan Bhutaganan Chanye Ejante Tamas Ejante Satvika Devan Yaksharaksham Shirajasan Pretan Bhutaganan Chanye Ejante Tamasajana. So it is mentioned that those whose experiential faith is predominantly in mode of goodness, they are most likely inclined to worship the demigods. And those whose experiential faith is predominantly influenced by mode of passion, then they are most likely influenced to worship the yakshas and rakshasas. And if one's experiential faith is influenced by mode of ignorance, then they are most likely inclined to worship the pretas, bhutaganas, like that. So this is how the three modes can affect either the shastric faith or the experiential faith or the sentimental faith. Now the three modes can affect one's swabhava also. Swabhava means actually stimulus response system or qualities, natural qualities, you can say. So when someone's swabhava is affected by mode of goodness, then there will be cleanliness, regularity, clarity. These are the qualities which are born out of mode of goodness. And if one's swabhava or one's conditioned nature is affected by mode of passion, then one manifests the qualities of greed, lust, attraction to opposite sex, like that. And if one's conditioned nature is more affected by mode of passion, then it leads to lethargy, sleep, procrastination, and all these things. So, a sadhaka like us, we have pure shastric faith, but a contaminated swabhava, which may be contaminated by the three modes. So, therefore, we want to worship Krishna only for pleasing Krishna. And we want to worship Krishna only through the ninefold devotional process. But in doing that, we face obstacles in the form of our conditioned nature, which may manifest obstacles like lust, anger, greed, lethargy, sleep, etc. So we want to wake up early in the morning. We want to chant the holy names. That desire to wake up early in the morning, chant the holy names, is born out of our pure devotional faith. But when we attempt to chant the holy name, you know, sometimes we feel drowsy. That is due to the influence of mode of ignorance in our swabhava. And sometimes we feel extremely distracted. That is due to the influence of mode of passion in our swabhava. Like that. So, we have to understand that. So, in this context, we tried to understand last time that are we pure devotees or not? So, we tried to understand that this depends on how do you define pure. If you say, if your definition of pure devotee is that our swabhava should be completely purified, if that is your definition of pure, then no, we are not pure devotees. But if you are asking me, are you a sadhaka practicing pure devotional service? Then the answer is a very emphatic yes, with all humility at my disposal. Yes, I am a sadhaka or a practitioner practicing pure devotional service. I am not telling I have perfected pure devotional service, but I am a practitioner of pure devotional service. And in my attempt to practice pure devotional service, I face obstacles because of the three modes which influence my swabhava in the form of lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, and pride. But my pure faith is my pure faith is actually evident from my perception of these lust, anger, envy, greed, these obstacles, where I perceive them as anarthas. So I am perceiving them as anarthas. This indicates that my faith is pure. But the very fact that I am affected by them shows that my swabhava is contaminated by the three modes. So this in brief is what we discussed last week. Before we start today's discussion, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share, ask, add, you can please go ahead. we can take, and then we can move ahead to today's discussion. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions based on what we have discussed till now? You can either raise your hands or you can type your questions in the chat box. Yes, Baleshwar Ramana Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Prabhu, I just wanted to understand a bit more about when you said about non-sastric or a sastric faith and with ignorance. In that case, we would try to pull down the people, something like that. So,
I said shastric faith.
Shastric faith with ignorance.
Yeah.
Yeah, Prabhu, so can you please elaborate a bit on this context? Like a person having a shastric faith, then how he's getting diverted towards the ignorance thing?
Because of the influence of the modes.
Okay.
That is due to the influence of the modes. That is not due to the influence of Shastra. Because of Shastra, he wants to worship Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the mode of influence, he wants to... he understands that Vishnu is the all-powerful. So if I want my desires to be fulfilled, then I have to worship Vishnu. But because of the influence of mode of passion, he wants to commit violence towards other living entities. For that, he takes shelter of Vishnu. So his committing violence is not inspired by Shastras, that is inspired by mode of ignorance.
Okay, is it like how you understand that there are three Puranas for the ignorance, for the passion and for the goodness? In that way, he is more inclined toward the Shastra of ignorance categories.
That is also true, yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Kesho Priya Mathu.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Dhanavad Pranams Prabhuji. Prabhuji, again the same doubt, Prabhuji. Pure devotional faith and sattvic, rajasic, tamasic, scriptural faith also falls in all the four categories, Prabhuji. So what will be the other three categories, like except pure devotional service, nine Navavida Bhakti we are following, Prabhuji. What will be they following, Prabhuji? Those three. Shastric, Rajasic, and Tamasic in scripture.
Sometimes their goal only may be influenced by the three modes, but their process may be pure devotional also. That is what Krishna says that Bhagavatam says, Akama Sarvakamova Mokshakama Udaradihi Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusham Param. So Akama is a pure devotee. Sarvakama is a person whose desires fall within the category of Rajas and Tamas. And Mokshakama is one who has a desire which falls within the mode of goodness. So, even though they may have these goals, which may be within three modes, but Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Ejeta Purusham Param, they may try to fulfill those desires by practicing pure bhakti, in which the practice is pure, but the goal is mixed. So that could be
sometimes, Prabhuji, or is any other way also is there? Like, yeah, some people may, as you said, pure devotional service they may follow, but
yeah,
Prabhuji.
So I am coming to that.
Okay,
So they may practice pure devotional service to attain that. That is one category that is considered to be amongst the mixed devotees. This is considered to be superior. But the inferior form of mixed devotees, what they do, their practice also they mix with either karma, jnana, yoga. So in that case, that becomes, the process is also mixed and the goal is also mixed. So this is an So this becomes an inferior form of mixed devotional service, where not only is the goal mixed, but the process is also mixed like that.
Okay. So karmis, gyanis, yogis, they fall under this only, no, Prabhuji?
Yeah. The karma yogis, jnana yogis, ashtanga yogis, karma mishra bhaktas, jnana mishra bhaktas, yoga mishra bhaktas, they all fall in this category.
Okay. Thank you,
Prabhuji. Okay. Anything else anyone would like to share as add? There is one question in the chat box. What exactly does swabhava mean? Swabhava means conditioning. In this context, swabhava means conditioning. Anything else before we move forward? Okay. So if there is none, then we will continue our discussion. Krishna says, Tribir Gunamayer Bhaver Evis Sarvamidam Jagat Mohitam Nabijanati Mamebhya Paramavyayam. The whole world, bewildered by the objects and persons made of the three gunas, does not know me, the unchanging, who am above all of these things. Okay. So, the whole world bewildered by the three modes. So now, if you see, sadhakas cannot know Krishna. Why? Because their swabhava is contaminated by the three modes. And when the swabhava is contaminated by the three modes, also, then one cannot understand Krishna because one will be distracted. Because one will be distracted from focusing on Krishna. One will be completely absorbed in raga dvesha like that. Icha dvesha samuttena dvanda moha varata sarva bhutani sammoham sarge yanti parantapa. So this person, so a sadhaka will be extremely distracted due to the influence of the three modes in his swabhava. So he will sometimes be distracted by lust, sometimes by greed, sometimes by anger, and will keep him away from Krishna. This will keep him away from constant meditation on Krishna. Okay. But the advantage of the sadhaka is that because his faith is pure and his practice is pure and his goal is pure, by such a practice, slowly the influence of the three modes in his swabhava will keep coming down. Tada rajastamo bhava kama lobada yaschaye chetayetair anaviddam stam sattve prasidati. So even though his conditioned nature is contaminated by the three modes, which will stop him from focusing on Krishna, but gradually by the practice of pure devotional service, the influence of the three modes in the swabhava will keep going down, and eventually it will become completely cleansed. Then he will be able to fully focus on Krishna. Esham tu antagatam papam jananam punya karmanam tantamoha nirmukta bhajante mam dridavrata. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. So when by practice of devotional service, Esham tu antagatam papam, when one's swabhava becomes purified of all kinds of material propensities, te dvandva moha nirmukta, then such a person can overcome the influence of dualities in the form of likes and dislikes and all that. Te dvandva nirmukta bhajante mam dridavrata, then one can worship Krishna with great steadiness. Dridavrata bhajan, fixed devotional service, nishta, one can reach nishta. So this is what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. So in this way, even though sadhakas cannot know Krishna immediately, but if they just stick to their process, they will eventually equip themselves to know Krishna. What to speak of knowing Krishna, they will equip themselves to become associates of Krishna. That is possible. But when we say that, but when the same statement that people bewildered by the three modes do not know Krishna, when it refers to either the people who have mixed scriptural faith or mixed non-scriptural or sentimental faith, They cannot know Krishna because they are not equipped with a process which is beyond three modes. And only by a process which is beyond three modes, one can know Krishna. So they don't have a process which is beyond three modes. And because Krishna is beyond three modes, by that process, they can never know Krishna. Okay. So therefore, we have to understand when we say we are impure, in what sense we are impure. And when we say we are pure, we have to know in what sense we are pure. Our faith is pure. Our goal is pure. Our process is pure. But our conditioned nature is not yet pure. But it is in the process getting purified because of our practice of devotional service. Okay. So that is why he says, Tribir gunamayair bhavair evis sarvam idam jagat mohitam nabi janati mamebhya paramavyayam. So because of the influence of the three modes, being bewildered by these three modes, people cannot know me. That is what Krishna says in this verse 7.13. And then we saw 7.14. Let us start today's discussion. Yeah, 7.14. So we will start today's discussion from now. Okay. So here Krishna says very... Oh. Just give me 1 second. I made a mistake. Okay. Just give me 1 second. I made a mistake here. I will correct that mistake. 7.14. Just give me 1 second. I'm really sorry for the inconvenience caused. There was a mistake in my cut paste. So, yeah, I am just fixing it. I just fixed it. I'm going to share the screen. Okay. So, yes. So 7.14, this is a famous verse, often quoted by Srila Prabhupada also. Daiviye shagunamayi mama maya duratyaya mamevaye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. So he says, Esha mama gunamayi maya. My maya, which is made of the gunas, Esha, this, mama, my, gunamayi maya, maya which is made of the three gunas, daivi. So here, daivi, the word daivi means it is fit for the jiva's pleasure. It is fit for the jiva's pleasure. That is the meaning of daivi. But duratyaya, it is very difficult to surpass. It is very hard to surpass. But maam eva ye prapadyante, but those who surrender to me alone, mayam etam tarantite, they can cross over maya. So now Krishna says, it is very difficult to cross this maya. Does it mean maya is actually bad? The purpose of maya is to trap us and trouble us. Is that the purpose of maya? No. Actually, maya is an agent of Krishna. Maya is not anti-Krishna. Maya is pro-Krishna. Maya is Krishna's agent only. And Krishna wants every living entity back, but without forcing them. Because Krishna knows that all the living entities will be perfectly happy only when they are back in his loving association. So the role of Maya is when the living entity has decided to turn his face away from Krishna, there needs to be a system which facilitates his existence without the direct interference of Krishna. And that facilitation is done by Maya. Because the Jiva desired it. So Krishna, through the agency of Maya, facilitates it. But ultimately, Maya is also very happy doing this. Maya is not very happy doing this. That is why it is mentioned, Vilajja Manaya Yasya Statum Ikshapate Amuya Vimohita Vikattante Mamaham Iti Durdiya. Bhagavatam says that actually Maya Devi is very ashamed of coming in front of Krishna, even though whatever she is doing is under the guidance of Krishna only. But still, her job is a thankless job. Why? Because she has to facilitate the likes of rebellious souls. But ultimately, even Maya Devi desires to help the living entities turn towards Krishna. And when the living entity decides to ultimately attain Krishna, then again Maya Devi does not let them go. Why? Because she ensures that they don't prematurely go back to the spiritual world without giving up their false ego, without giving up their envy and everything completely. Because with all that, with a desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, with traces of those desires still there, if they go to the spiritual world, they will actually suffer there. Because there, everyone will be worshipping Krishna. Everyone will be focused on Krishna. And if you don't have that kind of a desire to serve Krishna, no one, no one cares about you. Not that no one wants to care about you, but everyone is completely absorbed in Krishna. And whoever is assisting Krishna in that, they cooperate with them, and in cooperation they like to give pleasure to Krishna. And we will be wondering, I am also a person existing, at least one of you engage for my pleasure, like that we may think. So Maya Devi's role is to ensure that we are perfectly ready. Before that, she will not let us go. So how we can convince Maya that I am actually ready to go? By surrender to Krishna. So the more intensely we surrender to Krishna, the more we are passing Maya's evaluation. So the more Maya gets convinced that yes, this person really wants to go back, I will assist this person. Okay. So therefore, one thing, so one thing we should understand is that in this material world, there is no evil force which is acting against the jivas. There is no evil force which is acting against the jiva's best interests. There is nothing. There is no external force. Maya is not an external force which is acting against the best interests of the jiva. Just that the jiva itself does not want his best interest. He is not aware of his best interest. And Maya Devi is just facilitating him with the hope that he will understand what his best interest is. Okay. So there is no evil force. No one is conspiring against the jiva to keep him suffering. So that actually, if you think about it, it is a very hope-giving understanding actually. This is very hope-giving. There is no force which is conspiring against the jiva. keep him in this material world. So if the jiva is wants to leave and leave the material world and attain the shelter of Krishna, then there is no force which is stopping him. Whatever, no external force which is stopping him. Like that. So here he says, Mameva ye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. But those who surrender to me alone can cross over this maya. So he says, then how will they be delivered from the bewilderment of the three modes? Because in the previous verse it mentions, Tribir gunamayair bhaver ebis sarvam idam jagat mohitam nabijanati mamebhya paramavyayam. So in the previous verse he says like that. So bewildered by the three modes, no one knows me. So then how one can be delivered from this bewilderment of the three modes? By surrendering unto Krishna. The word Daivi comes from Deva, which means those who sport with sense enjoyment. So Daivi comes from Deva, which means those who sport with sense enjoyment. So when the jivas who are desiring to sport with sense enjoyment, this Maya Devi facilitates that. So therefore, Daivi. So, Esha Mama Gunamai Maya Daivi. It is fit for the Jiva's pleasure. So it refers to the Jiva's. Thus, Daiva makes it possessive, that belonging to the Jiva's for their pleasure. So this Maya is for the pleasure of the Jiva's. Daivi therefore means that which bewilders the Jiva's. This Maya is the bewilderer of the jivas who enjoy sense objects. So bewildering means what? Bewildering means like anesthesia. So bewilderment is not always bad. So if a surgeon is performing a surgery, essentially, the role of an anesthetist is to keep the patient under illusion. Anesthesia is a kind of illusion. But that illusion is done in all good motive, actually. Okay. Because the living entity has the serious desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. So that can be facilitated only by creating an alternative identity of the living entity. Because if the jiva knows that he is the soul and he is subservient to Krishna, and he cannot enjoy separately from Krishna, then that will be very much distress for the jiva who wants to enjoy separately from Krishna. So what does Maya do? Maya has this prakshepatmika shakti and the avaranatmika shakti. Okay. So, this Maya has these two shaktis. One is prakshepatmika and avaranatmika. Okay. Avaranatmika means covering potency. Okay. Prakshepatmika means it gives you alternate identification. So avaranatmika shakti covers your identity as the soul. That I am not this body, I am the soul. And I am subservient to Krishna. That is covered by the Avaranatmika Shakti. And it makes you identify with the gross and subtle body. Okay, this is Prakshepatmika Shakti. So this kind of an illusion or bewilderment is created by the Maya, which is essentially doing this job of actually of an anesthetist who is giving anesthesia, because if without anesthesia, if surgery is performed, it is extremely painful. It is very painful. So therefore, Maya creates this gross body and subtle body and makes the jiva identify with it. And it creates this material world for the enjoyment of the jiva, who can utilize these products of the three modes for his own enjoyment. That is facilitated. So now someone may say, if only Maya did not bewilder me, my life would have been so good. Actually, this is a big illusion. This is not correct. It is like a person undergoing surgery telling that the anesthetist has made my life miserable. I want only the surgeon. I don't want the anesthetist. I don't want any anesthesia, because the anesthetist has put me under illusion and he has made my life miserable. Really? Is this true? So, in the third canto of Bhagavatam, there is a description by Kapila Dev where he describes the state of the living entities which enter the body of Mahavishnu at the time of dissolution. Okay. At the time of dissolution, the living entity, his gross body and subtle body is all taken away from the jiva, and the jiva, pure jiva, enters into the body of Mahavishnu. Okay. And it is described that because the jiva is not ready for liberation, not that he has become favorably disposed towards Krishna, but just that it is time for dissolution. So forcefully, the gross body and the subtle body is taken away from Krishna. So which means the jiva has no scope for misidentification. So the jiva can only identify with that self. So the jiva can only identify with that self. So this is what? This is self-realization. Okay. But this kind of self-realization for a person who is not ready for self-realization can be the most painful thing. So therefore, Krishna puts all the jivas into a complete sleeping state. You know, sushupti. He puts all the jivas in a sleeping state and absorbs the jiva within his body. Okay. But Kapila Dev describes sometimes some jivas, they don't go to sleep for whatever reason. Okay. So at time what happens? Because all the while this jiva has been identifying with their gross body and subtle body, when they see that there is no gross body and subtle body, they say, I am dead, I am dead. Like that, you know, they feel like, oh, I am dead. Nashte ahankarane atmanam nashtavat mrisha manyamanaha. Nashte ahankarane. When the products of ahankar, which is the gross body and subtle body, when that is gone, atmanam nashtavat, they think that I am dead. Mrisha manyamanaha, they wrongly think. So they wrongly think that they are dead. But evam pratyavamarsha. But upon careful reconsideration, they wonder, I am dead. Then who is thinking? Who is thinking that I am dead? Like that they wonder. And then they realize, oh, actually I am not dead. But I am not this body. I was identifying with my gross body and subtle body. But I am not this gross body, I am not this subtle body, I am the soul. This is the truth. So what is this? This is actually self-realization, right? But this self-realization, when it is forced upon a living entity who is not ready for it, uh, the Kapiladev describes his state is nashta vitta iva atura. It is like a person who has very with great effort he has gained lot of money and he loses everything. He will be under extreme distress. So the position of this jiva, who is forced, from whom forcefully the gross body and subtle body is taken away, it is mentioned that this jiva undergoes unbearable pain, which is even much worse than hellish suffering. At least in hell, there is somebody, even though, and between two suffering, there is some anticipation of enjoyment. That is what Kapiladev says in another chapter. He says that narakastopi deham vai puman natyaktum icchati. So he says that even in hell, the living entity does not want to give up body, because giving up the body is worse than hellish suffering. So therefore, the body created by Maya, the gross and subtle body, when it is taken away from the soul forcefully, which is actually considered to be liberation, but that liberation for an unqualified soul is more painful than hellish suffering. Therefore, the Lord puts that jiva to sleep. Okay. So to say that I am suffering because of Maya is actually an ungrateful statement. So it is like a patient telling, I am suffering because of the anesthetist. No, you are not suffering because of the anesthetist. Actually, you are not suffering because of the anesthetist. If only Maya goes on a strike and she says, I will no longer provide you with a gross body or a subtle body, then the jiva will suffer unbearable pain, which is million times worse than the pain of hell. So if actually, you know, the covering of the gross body and subtle body is the cause of suffering, and if the gross body and subtle body is taken away, the living entity will be very happy. If this was true, then ghosts would be at least, all the ghosts must be more happier than ordinary living entities, right? Ghosts, at least they don't have a gross body. They may have just a subtle body, right? So at least they are half liberated, right? So if without gross body and subtle body, if it leads to happiness, then ghosts would be at least they must consider themselves half liberated. At least they don't have gross body, right? So, but this is not true. So therefore, one should understand that Maya is actually facilitating. She's our well-wisher. Okay. But just that we have to understand how she is working. We have to understand how she is working. So then, when we understand that, then seeing how she is pushing, she is pushing us so that we would take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. Actually, Maya works in conjunction with Shastras and Sadhu. Sadhus, Shastra and Maya, they all are in one project. What is that project? A project of taking the living entity closer to Krishna's lotus feet. So Maya does her job, the Sadhus do their job, and the Shastras do their job. When all three of them do their job properly, then the jiva gradually comes closer to the lotus feet of Krishna and he takes shelter of Krishna. So the statement that this Maya is the bewilderer of the jiva who enjoys sense objects, so this bewildering should be seen as the job of an anesthetist. This bewildering is not crooked bewildering. This is not crooked bewildering, but this is benevolent bewildering. Benevolent bewildering. So, with all desire to help the jiva. Okay. So, it is made of the gunas. And by implication, it is a great noose of three stress. So, guna means the modes. Guna also means rope. Okay. Daivi yesha gunamayi mama maya. So, gunamayi maya means my maya, which is like a rope, which means which can bind you to this material world, but not against your desires. Like that. So, here he says, so this maya, the external energy belongs to me, the Supreme Lord. It is difficult to surpass. It is difficult to surpass this maya. As a noose, it is impossible for anyone to untie or to cut it. Touching his chest, the Lord says, have faith in my words. Anyone who renders unto me the form of Shyam Sundar crosses over this maya. So he crosses over this maya. Mamevaye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. Like that. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share as add? Yes, Keshav Priya Mataji.
Harishna Prabhuji, I have two doubts. I'll ask the first one. Prabhuji, you are telling that at the time of dissolution, a living entity in a pure form, he will enter into Karnadeshai Vishnu and the Lord makes him to sleep. And you are telling that since the Jiva will suffer a lot, so that's why Lord puts him in sleep. When he does not have a subtle body or gross body, I couldn't understand how a Jiva suffers, Prabhuji. I couldn't get that.
Because the soul itself has, it can perform all the functions of thinking, feeling, willing. The jiva itself has the capacity to do all that. But in the material world, he is given alternative,
Prabhuji, but the mind is always existing, no, Prabhuji. Like now it is in the materialistic thing, consciousness, but again, once it gets cleared, it is in spiritual consciousness. But there should be, there is, mind is always there, no, Prabhuji, in jiva.
Mind means how does it look, Mataji?
I don't know, Prabhuji, but that's what you have also explained. Nee. That's why
mind means
it is subtle, Prabhuji. It is a place where our thinking is going on.
It is a place where all these all the impressions are stored.
Yeah, Prabhuji,
so
but
so the jiva does not, but it's not that the jiva in itself cannot think without the mind. So that mind is there in the material world for the jiva because an alternative identity is created. So the material impressions, a place where the material impressions can be stored, because material impressions cannot be stored in the soul. So there is an alternative mechanism that is needed. So for the material mind is there. But that does not mean without the mind, the jiva in itself cannot think, feel, and will. You know, that is possible for the jiva. It has all those.
The spiritual factors. Impression is also stored in mind only, no, Prabhuji, after total anatta nivritti.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the point I'm asking.
No, but that time, but if there is no spiritual impression at all, then that mind is different. You know, that mind is. See, mind in itself is neither material nor spiritual. So it depends on if it has material impressions, it is material mind. If it has spiritual impressions, it is spiritual mind.
Yeah.
If it has no impressions, then it is neither spiritual nor material.
Yes, Prabhuji. So in this pure state, when it enters into Karnadeshai Vishnu, what state that, like, I couldn't understand that part, Prabhuji. Why he is suffering?
He is suffering because he has no scope for enjoyment.
Oh. So his
because
spiritual impressions are also not revived. So he is in that.
Yeah,
is it because
no spiritual
of that?
Impression. There is no spiritual
okay.
impression. And
okay.
there is, you know, there is a desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. That is there.
Mm. Mm.
And there is no facility of gross body or subtle body to accomplish that. So therefore, he...
Okay, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, and this shloka, Prabhuji, Krishna himself clearly says, Devi asa gunamayi, mama maya. Like only one who surrenders to me, they only can get out of three modes. But we could see, Prabhuji, in other yogiya system like Jnana Yoga and other yoga system, Prabhuji, how is that? They will also be reading all these things also, no, Prabhuji? Like, how is that they're trying to surpass three modes on their own effort, Prabhuji? They will be also within Shastrically reading, they should be reading Bhagavad Gita also, no, Prabhuji?
But read what you are reading, it needs Sukriti.
Oh. This shloka is there for all of, like, everyone. The shloka is existing now, Prabhuji, for past 5,000
yeah.
years.
Yeah. Hmm. So, I will tell you something.
Hmm. Okay.
So, the same differential calculus book. You have studied differential calculus, Namadhi?
Yes, Prabhuji. 12th.
So, in your 12th, 11th, 12th, yes. You would have studied differential
yes,
calculus.
Prabhuji. Yes, Prabhuji.
Let's say someone in his 11th, 12th did not take science, but he took commerce or arts. Okay.
Mm. Mm.
So, in differential calculus also, the English alphabets are only there.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, Prabhuji.
So, when he looks at D, DY, DX, you know, he will read. It's not that he cannot read, but can he understand?
No.
He cannot, right?
Oh. So
just because the same verse is there, this is why when Krishna says guhyatamam, guhyataram, guhyam, you know, secret, more secret, most secret, what is so secret if everything is openly there?
Correct.
So the secret is, it is secret because it needs Sukriti to understand. If that Sukriti is not there, the same verse will read, but he will not read what you are reading. He will read something else completely different.
But Prabhatyante means surrender, no, Prabhuji. How could it be read different? Like
yeah.
It's even a Sanskrit word.
So Prabhatyante means what?
Surrendering, no, Prabhuji.
Surrendering means what?
Surrender to Krishna. Like just following his orders is surrendering, Prabhuji. Just following.
Yeah. Jnana Yoga is not his order.
Oh.
Karma Yoga is not his order.
Oh, since it is from Shastra.
Yoga is not his order.
Yeah.
So
it is in scripture.
Krishna
yes,
only
yes.
says, Tasmad Yogi Bhavarjuna in the very previous chapter, 6th chapter, he said, be a yogi, O Arjuna, he says. So he said, is that not Krishna's order?
Oh,
Krishna,
okay.
Krishna tells Arjuna, what is that verse? Karmanyevadikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. Ma karma phala heturbur mate sangosto karmani. It is an order. Is that not Krishna's order? So prapadyante can be taken by them as you know, surrendering to the order of Krishna, where Krishna orders about
karma yoga.
Karma yoga.
Okay. Oh, a whole Bhagavad Gita, they will be understanding only on that. Understand like in that adhikar only, is it Prabhuji? Like they will every shloka they can read it on their own understanding.
Yeah, according to their adhikar they will understand. Or even if they have a similar understanding of particular verses, but they may not consider that that is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Like we do understand karmanyevadhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana, that verse we understand just as a karma yogi understands only. But we understand that is not the essential conclusive teaching of Bhagavad Gita. We say sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja is the conclusive teaching of Bhagavad Gita.
Yes, Prabhuji.
So even though individual verses may be understood the same way by two different practitioners, but still they may not be Saragrahis. They may not have the capacity to distill the essence of Bhagavad Gita.
Okay.
That they may not have.
Understood, Prabhuji. Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Wonderful explanation for the whole shloka, Prabhuji. Thank you.
Right. Okay. There are some questions in the chat box. In the meantime, if others have any further comments, discussion points, you can please go ahead. In the meantime, I will take some points from the chat box. What is the surgery that is happening under Maya's anesthesia? I think I have discussed, I have already described it. The surgery is, you know, if the jiva is forced, the pain of forced self-realization is the surgery. The pain of forced self-realization, when the jiva is not ready for it, that is the surgery. And Maya covers him nicely with the grass body and subtle body so that he does not feel the pain of forced self-realization. Okay, next question. When the purification from the modes happens, is it progressive from ignorance to passion to goodness, or one can directly go from lower modes to transcendence? It is not generally ignorance to passion and then passion to goodness. It is from ignorance and passion to goodness and from goodness to transcendence. Generally, without coming to the platform of goodness, one cannot transcend goodness. So therefore, before transcending the three modes, or in order to transcend the three modes, one has to first transcend the two modes. The two lower modes have to be transcended first. Only then one can transcend the third mode, which is goodness. Next question. Do we make any attempt to rise above our mode, or just surrender or depend to Krishna? We do endeavor to surrender to Krishna, and as a part of surrendering Krishna, because surrendering to Krishna is not a theoretical thing, it's a very practical thing. So what does it mean to surrender to Krishna? Surrender to Krishna means anukulyasya sankalpo pratikulyasya varjanam. These are the first two aspects of surrender: accepting whatever is favorable and rejecting whatever is unfavorable for Krishna, whatever is unfavorable for progressing on the path of devotional service. So in when we try to reject, so what is unfavorable for devotional service, we do reject generally situations, objects which are in the lower modes. Okay. A lifestyle, situation, etc., which are in the lower modes. Right. That is why that is very much a part of surrendering to Krishna. So avoiding things which are within the lower modes, it is not like avoiding lower modes is not against the principle of surrendering. So it is very much a part of the process of surrender, actually. That is why Rupa Goswami says, Atahara prayasascha prajalpo niyamagraha janasanga saulyamcha shadbir bhaktir vinashyati. He talks about six unfavorable things. The six unfavorable things are mostly within the three modes, within the lower two modes. So the process of surrender also includes the ability to externally stay away from the triggers which can trigger our lower modes. But in doing that, and by practicing devotional service, there is also internal purification of the three modes. So external avoidance of the triggers of the three modes is our duty as a part of our process of surrendering. But when we do that, internal purification of modes automatically happens by that. by that process. Is that clear, Mataji? Does it answer your question? You have asked two questions. Gopi Vallabhi Mataji, does it answer both of your questions? Okay, thank you. Okay, next question. Is not the mind exist in this material world only and not in the spiritual world? No, not necessarily. So if you define what is mind, okay, if mind is a place where the impressions are stored and those impressions inspire thinking, feeling and willing, if that is your definition of mind, then such mind exists in the spiritual world also. Okay. So, because there is definitely, there is memory of past experience, there are thoughts, there are emotions, everything is there in the spiritual world also. So, if that is how we define mind, then that mind is there in the spiritual world also. You cannot say that. But yes, material mind is not there. But if you define mind as material mind, which is a repository of material impressions, which generate material emotions, so then that kind of mind is not there in the spiritual world. Okay. So, okay, next question. Prabhupada says, my devotees are conscious of Krishna, but not cautious of Maya. Can you please explain? I mean, that's not a definition of devotees. So that is Prabhupada actually lamenting that my devotees are not cautious of Maya. So what it means is, they are not cautious, means they are not properly cognizant of the ways of Maya. How Maya is trying to help the jiva, they are not aware. Therefore, they are injuring themselves. Therefore, they are injuring themselves. That is what it means. He is not explaining that they are not cautious of Maya does not mean, does not mean Maya is an evil force. It means that they are not conscious of how Maya works. That is why they are injuring themselves. That's what it means. Yes, Sukhava Mati.
Haribol, can you hear me?
Yes, Mati.
Hare Krishna, my obeisances. Thank you so much, Prabhu, for your wonderful explanation of the thankless text of Maya Devi and how she's actually really trying to help us. And sometimes we don't get inspired unless there's a little, I don't know, unless a little pushing from Maya. She helps to inspire us in another way. My question is, when you were talking about, maybe I misheard something. I have two questions. You were talking about when the souls go into the body of Karana Dakshai Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse than hell. Is that what you were saying? No.
No, it is not worse than hell, because the Lord puts the jivas to a state of absolute sleep.
Okay.
So
they're unconscious, and that's the anesthesia.
Yeah. So it's another anesthesia. So Maya does the kind of anesthesia, the same job that Maya does through the gross body and subtle body during the time of creation and maintenance, the Lord does the same without the gross body and subtle body, but through another mechanism by putting the jiva completely into sleep.
Okay.
So,
I didn't think it was suffering in that place. Yes, he puts them to sleep. Okay, and then my other question. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But it is mentioned that, but sometimes for some reason, and some jivas, they don't go to sleep, or sometimes the anesthesia is improper. You know, if there is a if the effect of the anesthesia weans away before the patient gets healed completely. So it is saying like that. So then he feels the pain of the surgery actually. So so it is mentioned that there is not much details given about it, but it is mentioned that sometimes some very very few jivas, they experience this state of forced self-realization in the body of Mahavishnu, which means they don't go to sleep and they realize that I don't have my gross body, I don't have my subtle body. They think, I am dead. Like,
Yes.
Yeah,
like, I got that part. I remember that part. Now I understand. Yeah, and so then they think, who's the one thinking I'm dead? Yes, okay.
So that state is actually very painful. It is worse than hell, actually.
Yeah. Would you say that possibly as we progress in Krishna consciousness, sometimes Krishna puts us in, you know, painful situations of purification where we're almost like our old identity doesn't work anymore and we're kind of forced to grow. And then, but we don't know what our new identity is. And that is kind of like a little experience of that hell, like an identity crisis, not being able to, would you say that could happen to us sometimes? And that's why we tend to sometimes not want to grow, because it's a little painful to not
you
exactly.
The fear of uncertainty or
yes the unknown, like, so if I'm not this personality Sukhavaha that I think that I am, that does this and does that and acts this way, and that the way I am acting currently isn't working and it's not favorable for my Krishna consciousness, and I need to upgrade and develop some new habits, in the process of developing those habits there may be some like, I don't know who I am outside of these habits. I mean, I've experienced it. It's like almost kind of like a feeling of schizophrenia. And it's like you can be afraid. But then I've come to notice that actually it's not schizophrenia. It's a growth spurt. Is that?
Yeah.
Could we experience? But it feels like hell because we don't know who we are.
Yeah, because we are forced to face reality, and we are not aware of life beyond that.
What we know
beyond what we have all the while believed to be reality, and now all of a sudden we realize that there is an alternative reality. I was living in illusion. I agree.
Okay, and we don't quite know how to, but then Krishna helps us. And then, thank you so much. And then I had one more question. You were talking about the three modes and how we have to be in the mode of goodness, you know, before we can go to pure goodness. You know, and I've also heard that the mode of goodness can be the most entrapping. And then you were also talking about external mode of goodness and internal mode of goodness, because there are human beings that are, you know, very mode of goodness people. We even call them mode of goodness people, but they're not necessarily spiritualists or even practicing bhakti. So is that like external mode of goodness, but then the internal mode of goodness is much deeper, because they might be in the mode of goodness for profit, adoration, and distinction or something. Is that?
No, profit, adoration, distinction is more of mode of passion, actually. But other people who may have when I talk about external mode of goodness, I am talking about the external triggers, like a clean place, a lifestyle which is very not so fast-paced and not so lethargic, you know, very regulated. These are all like external. And internally, one may have the appreciation for these things. You know, one may have appreciation for cleanliness. One may have appreciation for regulation. So it's internal. But someone outside of the devotional realm may have these external triggers, may have these internal triggers, but they can never transcend goodness. Because they don't have a process to transcend goodness. And they don't even want to transcend goodness. They don't have a means to understand that even goodness is trapping them. For that also they have to be devotees. Only by devotional faith one can understand that I need to transcend even mode of goodness. So that faith one gets only when one comes to the stage of devotee service.
So then they can be an external mode of goodness, but be trapped there because they don't know even that it's a mode that needs to be transcended.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for your in detail explanations and for taking the time to answer all our questions. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Anything else before we move forward? Okay. So if there is no further discussion points or questions, it's already 9:28. I don't wish to start a new verse right now because we will get trapped. We will go way over time. So I think we will pause here and continue this discussion next week. I apologize. I went a little bit elaborately in discussing about the three modes because I thought it was relevant to understand. And it's a very foundation. I felt it's a very foundational topic that needs to be understood properly. So therefore, I went a little overboard in discussing this part, in discussing this part actually. So from next week onwards, I will definitely, you know, continue with our discussion forward. And I will give you the satisfaction of covering more verses also. But some verses are such that, you know, we need to spend some time to go a little deeper. But I promise that next week we will definitely have the satisfaction of covering little few more verses. I can't promise, but it is my desire. So ultimately, Krishna's will prevails. So, but thank you very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. We'll meet again next Friday. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you.